And our special guest tonight, J.B. Handley. We're going to talk a little bit about autism. His book is called How to End the Autism Epidemic. And then we'll get to your calls this hour on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, J.B. Handley with us. His book is called How to End the Autism Epidemic. We've been talking about COVID-19. We're going to get to your calls this hour as well. J.B., tell us the plight of your family in Jameson and what happened.
Oh, my son was injured by his vaccines when he was very young and ended up with an autism diagnosis. This is a very, very common experience of parents of children who have autism. Of course, it's been, by people like Tony Fauci and the CDC, covered up intensely. They'll go on and on about all the data. We've done all the studies. There's nothing to this. And yet we have this just torrential, nonstop epidemic of children who are disabled and all of them tied to the vaccine appointment. And the point of my book was to dispel a lot of the myths about vaccines, but then more importantly to talk about the very clear biological plausibility for how the adjuvants used in vaccines made from aluminum trigger what are known as immune activation events in the brains of babies. And this is the biological explanation for what goes on to be either autoimmune or neurological problems with the children down the road. And it perfectly matches the number of kids and the timing of the increase in vaccines. And so I really try to give a very science-based explanation for, you know, what happened to my son and what has happened to millions of American children. And on the one hand, most people don't want to believe it. But on the other hand, I've never met somebody who read my book who wasn't changed by the facts. And so I'm very proud. If you go on Amazon and check out How to End the Autism Epidemic, you don't have to buy the book. Just read the reviews. They are overwhelmingly positive. They've changed a lot of lives. They've changed the minds of elected. The book has changed the mind of elected officials. Pharma is so powerful that they continue to win the war of denialism. But honestly, most people in my community who are sort of medical freedom types, many have had their children injured by vaccines. COVID has been a boon to our community. There's many new members. There's a lot more people wary and distrustful of vaccines. And I don't say in my book that every vaccine is awful or that no one should vaccinate or anything like that. I just go through things pretty dispassionately and pretty fact-based and let people make their own decisions. The one thing I feel vehemently about is that every vaccine should be the choice of a parent or a person to put them in their body.
At what point did you start seeing some kind of change with Jameson, and what was that change that you saw?
It was linear to his vaccine appointments from his two-month appointment. So he lost the ability to sleep normally and developed a rash all over his body after his two-month vaccine appointment. At his 12-month, we pretty much lost him neurologically for a period of time. And so it was linear and obvious. And George, what's amazing about all the denialism out there and all the hatred that I'll get because I say these things and I really couldn't give a crap. I know so many parents who have the exact same story. There's this simple notion, the wisdom of crowds. Start hanging out with autism parents and asking them about their experience. North of half of us all share the same story. It happened the same way.
Oh, and it's got to be heartbreaking. At what point did you realize it could be the vaccine?
Around the 12 months. Nothing was making sense, right? Why has he lost developmental milestones, right? This is not normal.
Were you aware of the controversy at the time?
No, this is 02.
Okay, this was before that.
First thing about the controversy had never even kind of hit the radar. Remember, in 2002, most of us weren't even on the internet. And so, no, I didn't. I really hadn't been exposed to it, and I would have laughed it off and thought that was ridiculous because I was vaccinated as a kid, and of course, no one would ever do that, and that's crazy.
Right.
So, no, I didn't know a thing about it. But then, you know, it hit us right in the face, and that's the kind of funny thing. Most parents of children with autism were the most compliant with their pediatricians. We're the most compliant people. We did them all.
Absolutely.
And that's how we were. We were very mainstream, very mainstream. And I still get endless grief about my willingness to speak up on this topic. The truth is there are so many people in positions of power and fame who know exactly what I do who are too scared to say it. And that makes me kind of crazy, which is why I wrote the book, because the book is sort of unassailable. Go read it. Deal with all the facts for yourself. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
And how's he doing now?
He is doing so remarkable. We literally had a miracle that in some ways, and I'm not that religious, but I might be after this. Jamie is a non-speaker, And anybody who has a kid with autism knows what I mean by that. About 40% of the kids are non-speakers. And out of the randomly, a parent recommended a communication method called Spelling to Communicate, which they'd had a miracle with their kid, and I didn't believe would have anything. I didn't think it would affect Jamie at all. Jamie has actually shown us that not only can he spell on a letterboard using his finger, which took about 6 months for him to perfect, but we were wrong about him. He's brilliant. He's eloquent. He's compassionate. He's knowledgeable. He's doing calculus. He knew Spanish.
Oh, that's great.
We literally had the miracle of all miracles for our son, and Jamie and I are co-writing a book about it that will come out on Autism Awareness Day called Notoriously Strong, an Autism Miracle, that tells the whole story. And a part of me thinks, man, maybe writing that book, I finally got thrown some kind of bone, and more importantly, Jamie got thrown a bone. But, George, the one thing I want to say to the listeners out there, I am convinced that the 40% of kids in America who are non-speaking with autism are all brilliant, and that their real disability is a motor disability. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is they can't talk even though they want to. And the injury to their brain is happening in their motor cortex, and they're literally not able to get their body to do what their brain wants it to do. And this communication method acknowledges that and is focused on their gross motor rather than their fine. And we have our son back, and it's literally unicorns and rainbows in my house. It's the greatest thing that's ever happened to me.
That's great. And does autism go away, JB?
Autism is a there are kids who recover from autism. In the case of Jamie, he still can't speak, but he can communicate highly effectively. So it's a real gray area to know how to answer that question.
Okay, I get it. Let's take some calls here as we talk about COVID-19. Renee in Alabama is with us. Renee, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
My son, who is studying to be a doctor, played a clip for me from UCLA and Stanford University saying that the CDC admits 6% of deaths are actually COVID. 94% are not. There are other deaths, but if they test positive for COVID, they put COVID on it. And it's proven that it's far less virulent than stated, with or without masks or social distancing, and that there is absolutely no basis for lockdown, and certainly nothing to substantiate further lockdown. And Burks on April 8th, she said the same thing. She said, while some countries are reporting coronavirus fatality numbers differently, in the U.S., we are counting you as a victim of the pandemic if you die while testing positive for the virus, even if something else causes your death. What do you say about that?
Covert. And this is echo some of the numbers you were talking about, JB.
Yeah, I think a lot of the things she said are valid. I think probably the thing that stands out to me the most is there's no basis to do lockdowns. There's no proof they work. There never was. It was all speculative. We copied a totalitarian regime's response, which is a little disturbing to think about. But there's no data that shows that more severe lockdowns had better outcomes. Two great examples. Argentina and Italy were lauded in the press for their extreme lockdowns, and they were models for how it's supposed to be done. Well, guess what? They're both having big outbreaks right now, because here's the deal. A lockdown just postpones the inevitable. We've known for centuries.
Exactly. You cannot put your head in the sand and expect it not to be there.
A virus is going to virus. With Sweden, they took it on the chin early, and go look at their death curve. With Argentina, they're taking it late, and with Italy, they're somewhere in between, because they did have a lot of deaths. But, you know, Argentina didn't have very many. And places like New Zealand and Hawaii that are just kind of choosing to stay isolated, that's not a solution.
No, not realistic. Did you hear about the Salt Lake City family? They wanted to go to Hawaii on vacation, and they contacted the states of Hawaii. And they were told, if you have this certain test, you get a barcode from us, take the test, and when you come into Hawaii, when you land in the Oahu or one of the islands, you take this little barcode, you show it to the ticket agent, they flash it, and then we let you through, assuming you've passed the test. So they did all that. They land in Hawaii from Salt Lake City, which is a long trip anyway. And they give the barcode on their phones to the ticket tellers who are responsible for this test. And they said, well, you're not certified for this test in Hawaii. We can't accept it. you can't come in. And they said, what do you mean we can't come in? We just flew from Salt Lake City. They said, I'm sorry, you can't come in. They had to get back on a plane and fly back to Salt Lake City. It's crazy.
I mean, so Hawaii happens to be one of my favorite places in the world. I mean, they're literally going to destroy the islands, right? You can't.
They're killing tourism.
You can't grow money out of the ground. Like, at some point, you just have to be realistic that hospitals can handle this. The virus is going to need to go through society as it always has. As it always has. And again, this is where I was talking about the herd immunity threshold. It's such an important data point, and it's never mentioned in the mainstream press, even though, you know, very qualified, preeminent experts in the world know it's true. It's 10 to 20%. It's unlikely that it's going to tax many of the hospitals if you just let it ride the way it did in Sweden. But either way, it's the way we've dealt with respiratory illnesses since the beginning of time. The data doesn't support that this virus is so different that we should make a different set of behaviors. That's what's so insane about what's going on. The infection fatality rate for young children is lower for COVID than it is for flu. For people over 70, it's higher than it is for flu. So you should make a targeted approach as the Great Barrington Declaration, which is signed by, at this point, tens of thousands of doctors and scientists from around the world, saying the exact same thing. Protect the old and take away every other lockdown.
Well, here's my other concern too, JB. If all of this that we have seen happen worldwide is the result of one person in Wuhan, China, coming down with this virus, it's never going to go away.
It's endemic. It's already endemic, which means it's going to circulate forever. That's just how it works.
Like the common flu that comes up all the time, this is not going to go away.
It's just another endemic illness. And anybody who thinks that it's anything but that is insane. And by the way, there's a reason. Do you not think that if somebody could have come up with a cold vaccine that it wouldn't have already happened? It's so crazy. Paul Offit.
And are they working on a common cold vaccine?
Oh, absolutely.
And they just can't get it.
Yeah, and this is a coronavirus, much as the common cold is a coronavirus. And so anybody who thinks the vaccine is going to save the world doesn't understand how vaccines work. The problem is that for whatever reason, coronavirus has always been a tough one for vaccine makers, and immunity does wane. And much like the flu, it changes every year, and we don't know where this one is going. And the current vaccines under development are much more oriented towards trying to reduce symptoms than reduce transmissibility. So anybody who thinks a vaccine is going to come in and save us all just hasn't done their research.
And what is a flu shot that people get every year? I don't, by the way, and I don't tell people to or not to. But what is the flu vaccine supposed to do?
Well, it is supposed to protect you from getting that year's most predominant strain of influenza.
It doesn't protect you against all the strains.
No, there's no such thing. And so, you know, Australia gets their flu earlier than we do, so they try to guess which one it is, and then they put it in our shot. And some years it covered 20% of the cases, some year it's 10, some years it's 50. But what's true is there's a number of articles by a gentleman at Johns Hopkins named Peter Doshi, D-O-S-H-I, who writes in the British Medical Journal about the flu vaccine. And what's true about the flu vaccine is there's no proof that it has that it reduces the number of flu deaths in a year. So I could never recommend that vaccine based on what the scientific data says. I think it's a commercial enterprise. What I also know, because there is clear published science that I put in my Twitter feed, flu vaccine creates something called viral interference, which makes other viruses worse. And there's a specific article in there about how influenza vaccines specifically can make coronaviruses more virulent for you. So all these idiots who are recommending that people get the flu shot because of coronavirus haven't read the science. Viral interference is a real thing, and it's a real problem.
Oh, geez.
They had a dengue fever vaccine in the Philippines just 2 years ago that triggered viral interference and actually made dengue more dangerous for children, and it was a national scandal.
Mm-hmm.
It was a nightmare for Pfizer. It's readily available if you Google around for it. So the COVID vaccine and the risk of viral interference is extremely high. So again, going back to the main point, we need to accept that this is endemic and just going to be part of our lives and move on.
Well, here's the other thing that baffles me. Assuming they come up with a vaccine, and that's a big assumption. If you get the vaccine, why do you care if I don't? You're supposed to be okay.
Absolutely. I fully support anybody's right to go get that vaccine. And at that point... Or not get it. I'm all for that. I think they should all be available for people. Now, the truth is, George, not everybody in my community agrees with this point, but I think the COVID vaccine development process that's going on right now is the best thing that ever happened to people like me who are wary of vaccines. And let me explain why really quickly. The hepatitis B vaccine is, in my opinion, the most damaging vaccine that we give to kids.
That's what I've heard.
When you read the safety studies for the hepatitis B vaccine, it's 120 children in a single trial followed for 6 days after they received the shot.
6 days.
It's a joke. Because there's these things called latent injuries. Latent simply means takes longer than 6 days to manifest that aren't covered in the trial. It's a joke how little. I had a buddy of mine who, he's kind of a pro-vaccine guy, and he was like, well, I'm not going to take the COVID vaccine because they haven't been through the same rigorous studies as the childhood vaccine schedule. I'm like, dude, you have no idea. We literally covered 6 days with it, like 20 kids. So COVID vaccines, on the other hand, every single step is being scrutinized to death. And I'm like, this is beautiful. What people are about to realize is vaccines injure way more human beings than people know, and they're not going to be able to hide this. It's very public, and every time someone in the trial, someone just died in one of the trials, someone else got transverse myelitis, every time even a single thing happens in these trials, it makes worldwide news.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I just want the facts. I want the data on how wide-scale the injury is. There's this remarkable organization called ICANN, and ICANN did a FOIA, and they got the actual MMR vaccine study trials that allowed the MMR vaccine to be approved. And what they found was shockingly high levels of injury to the gastrointestinal tracts of all these kids. Well, guess what? All the parents of the kids with autism claimed the GI injuries came from MMR, and they were able to show the actual government data. Now, of course, this never made the mainstream press, but I saw the data, and I was blown away at how high the injury rate was for a vaccine that had been approved. But that stuff's all buried, and nobody can find it anywhere. COVID stuff's not going to get buried. People may be uncomfortable that it's being fast-tracked, but trust me, this is the best thing that ever happened to somebody who thinks vaccines are generally unsafe for the average human. We'll find it all out through the COVID trials.
JB, when we come back, we're going to dive into all these calls now. We've got a lot of people on hold waiting to talk with you. JB Handley with us. You've heard what we've been talking about. We'll get to the calls in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. His blog is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Well, next hour, Chris Vola joins us. We're going to talk about conspiracy theories. His latest work is called Eye is for Illuminati, so get ready for that. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, back with our final segment with J.B. Handley as we're talking about COVID-19, autism as well. Let's go to Ed in Sierra Madre, California. Ed, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks, George.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask your guest if he would be willing to summarize at kind of a bottom line the difference between two communities, which I've divided the COVID people into, which is oversimplified, but one is the herd immunity community, and the other is the lockdown community. And I visualize something at the bottom line, like the tragedies, including death, which result under the herd immunity concept is much less, which I'm assuming your analysis would produce, is much less than the total tragedies under a lockdown, including death and unintended consequences, collateral damage, side effects, and friendly fire, for that matter. Is that possible? And where could one find the data to back that thing up?
Interesting question, JB.
Yeah, so I think he did an excellent job. I think there really are two camps, right? There's the lockdown camp and the herd immunity camp and the Barrington Declaration folks. You can go to barringtondeclaration.org, a wonderful group of highly credible mainstream scientists who are all basically saying, let's protect the ultra-vulnerable, which is typically defined as north of 70 with a comorbid condition, and let's let everybody else get on with their lives. And I would make the point that that camp is how it's been done since the beginning of time, right? So this is not a radical thought. people try to characterize herd immunity advocates as being heartless or careless with people's lives. That's hardly true. They're just realistic about what can be done within society without ruining society. You know, George, there's really interesting data coming out of the CDC where they can look at, you basically just look at total deaths compared to historical years,
mm-hmm.
right? That's how
mm-hmm.
you really find out what kind of impact corona had on a population.
Right.
And by the way, in Europe, that number has completely normalized. And in the U.S., we're very close to normalization, which nobody ever discusses, but it's there. But by the way, some new CDC data came out, and what they're showing is of the deaths that were larger than average, they're guesstimating that 30% of them were not caused by corona. And that's a big number of deaths. We're talking like 90 to 100,000 people. And unfortunately, some of the bigger numbers are in the younger age groups. And of course, the leading numbers there are things like suicide and drug overdoses.
Right.
And
right.
so there are people dying who would not otherwise be dead. The most tragic, obviously, is the suicides of those under the age of 20 that are all up dramatically. And so whatever public health official thought lockdowns were a good idea, it's going to have to face the true death and destruction that these have caused, having nothing to do with COVID. So to the gentleman's point, there are two camps. He's absolutely right. For better or worse, the two presidential candidates have put themselves in one camp or the other. And, you know, I know what choice I hope America makes, because I've become a little bit of a one-issue candidate on lockdowns alone, because they're having so much destruction on our society.
If somebody commits suicide because of COVID, because they're depressed, and that has happened, do they put it down as a COVID death
as opposed
to a suicide?
This is what's actually crazy, George. I understand your question. If they had tested positive for COVID, they would.
They would have. Yeah.
If they committed suicide because of the lockdown, they would not. But it's crazy that they would. But in fact, like here in Oregon, the newspaper finally got on it and asked OHA, Oregon Health Authority, about this. Yeah, no, once they're locked in as positive, if they die 3 months later in a car accident, it's a COVID death because of the way the counting works. It wasn't even necessarily done surreptitiously. It's just a recording issue. And so, yeah, there are plenty of people who are sitting there with COVID next to their name as the cause of death. It wasn't the cause of death.
In Missouri last week, they talked about how they overinflated their numbers.
Well, there's multiple motivations to do that, right? One is financial. Hospitals get more money. Then you have the whole political side of things that is there. But then you also have genuinely just like bad reporting systems where the COVID sits next to somebody's name, and then if they're deceased, it just falls into the system that way. Just sort of like stupid organization of data. And then people realized, oh, yeah, that's right, we're overcounting it. Well, there's so much scrutiny on that all those things are coming to fold. So, yeah, I think the number, I've already said, because of the PCR test, I think the death number could be, I haven't seen proof, could be overstated by as much as 90%, which, by the way, that would then make the IFR even lower.
Our first caller says that her son said, who's a doctor, that the real death rate of the 200,000 plus deaths is only 6% of that number.
Oh, he's saying it's only 6%. Well, yeah. I mean, he could be right. It really comes down.
So he's saying there's about 13 or 14,000 real COVID deaths.
Well, yeah, he could be right. It really comes down. See, we're very happy with a binary test, yes or no, you have it or you don't. In the real world, it's not that simple. If you're carrying a tiny viral load, you don't have COVID. You're not infected with it. You're not infectious, right? A real virologist would affirm all that. But we're giving people a test that is wildly, wildly too sensitive, which is why I have a son who's in college. He has many college friends who've been diagnosed with COVID. They don't have a single symptom.
Nothing.
They never should
nothing.
Have gotten a test.
And they're not even sick.
By the way, the reason the Chinese have such small case numbers, they figured this out about 6 months ago. They stopped testing people who didn't have symptoms. It's a simple thing.
Yeah.
This is the only time in the history of the U.S. where we're testing asymptomatic people. I'm north of 50. You're north of 50, I presume.
Yes.
We've never known somebody who got tested for the flu when they didn't have symptoms.
Never.
Do that.
Never. Mike in Denver, Colorado. Michael, go ahead.
Well, thank you so much, George, for taking my call tonight. Sure, and Mr. Hanley, first of all, I want to thank you not only for your research into the COVID-19, but your activism on autism, because, you know, so many times we lose sight of issues like autism and cancer during a pandemic like this. And I just want to thank you for keeping that subject alive. So thank you. I had a comment tonight on the vaccine. So as we know, when the rubella vaccine was introduced, which is the vaccine that commonly was thought to cause autism, there was a lot that we didn't know about this vaccine, much like the current COVID-19 vaccine. The CDC is currently in this testing phase for the COVID-19 vaccine. They've had about 500,000 participants sign up for the trials and need about 1 million more before it can be rolled out. But my question is, even though this disease isn't very deadly with younger people, do you feel that the government and CDC might mandate these vaccines for younger people? And what do you think the CDC's justification of that would be if they were to do it? Thank you.
Right. So the mandate would more than likely have to come from the state houses. Just how the law works. I know that's kind of weird, but all vaccine law, all health law takes place at the state level. So state legislatures would typically have to pass it. If the federal government chose to make it a mandate, that would be a first.
Right, but they could do it for flights.
Exactly. They could basically back into it by curtailing all your freedoms if you didn't get one, right? So it's not a mandate. Yeah, you just can't go anywhere. Do I think that there's a risk that they do that? Absolutely, I do. I think it's a legitimate risk that we'll be walking around with passports that have our vaccine schedules in them much sooner than any of us think. I think if Biden wins, it's far more likely to happen soon. And this is a pharmaceutical company's dream. So given how much power pharma has over our legislatures, given how much money they give to lobbyists, I mean, Tony Fauci is effectively a pharma spokesperson.
What do you think is going to happen, JB, realistically, if they mandate vaccines, what the American people will do?
I don't think they have enough of the popular will to pull it off. But I think what they'll do is they'll do it in as many places as you can. Like, most of us don't realize that healthcare workers have to get the Hep B vaccine and flu vaccines every year. Nurses, right? Just to be in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So, or teachers are like at the 99% level for being vaccinated, and they're encouraged by their unions to do so. So I think what they'll do is they'll just ramp up all that kind of like shadow mandatory stuff and cover bigger and bigger portions of the population. But I think the polls will be so negative that pulling off like a national mandate will be tough. But I do wonder about airlines. The unfortunate thing about airlines is they might do it.
They might do it individually.
Because they'll think it's good business.
That's right. I mean, like, they're mandating masks.
Look, wearing a cloth mask is like putting up a chain link fence to stop mosquitoes. It doesn't make any scientific sense because of the porous nature of the cloth relative to the size of the viral particle. Like, just on that basis alone, it's foolish. But the airlines did it, and they made it mandatory because they thought the consumer wanted them to.
Because it's airborne, someone's going to mandate all talk show hosts get it done because we talk through the air.
Exactly.
Sean in Santa Barbara, California. Welcome to the show, Sean. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, George. How are you doing?
All right. Hope you are, too.
Oh, yeah. So my question for Mr. Hanley is, there's a rumor, just a rumor, in Santa Barbara that Joe Biden, if he's elected, shall make it mandatory so everybody has to get the vaccine, but Trump won't. Does he know any facts, or is it just a rumor?
I mean, Biden has mumbled that, what the caller just said. Absolutely, Biden has. What Biden has basically said is, if the experts told me that we needed to mandate the vaccine, I'd mandate the vaccine. That's what I've heard him say. So whether he has the power to do that or what exactly he meant by that, I don't know.
Or whether he'll actually do it.
But it's fair. I think what is very fair to say is the chances of another lockdown go up with Biden and down with Trump. Like, I think that's probably a fair statement. And it's far more likely that Biden will listen to Fauci and that Trump will fire him. That's me speculating, by the way. But I think Scott Atlas will take on an even larger role if Trump were to continue to be president. And I think Fauci would be a very prominent player if it were Biden.
And it's back to these vaccines for just a moment, then we'll wrap up with some final calls here, JB. And you've got seven pharmaceutical companies scurrying to try to get this thing done. Two tests have already been canceled because people have gotten sick. What's the progress? Have we heard anything?
Oh, they're in trouble, right? I mean, many of them are at square one. There's a wonderful article by Peter Doshi in the British Medical Journal that basically explains that they're not even going to be measuring for whether the vaccine prevents against transmissibility. We're kind of down to if you take it, your symptoms will be more mild. That's not what people are expecting with a vaccine. So the gap between expectation and reality is growing, and many of the trials are stalled. And the premier vaccine guys in the world, many of whom I consider to be kind of arch enemies of mine, were predicting this from early on because they said we've just never been able to do the corona thing. And so I think anybody who kind of thinks they're going to hide in their house till the vaccine is here might be hiding for a really long time.
Whatever happened to taking an antibody from someone who's immune and creating that for everybody?
There is a movement to do that, and they're doing that through transfusions, right? And I can't comment on the effectiveness because I haven't spent the time to read the science, but from what I understand, that's actually a pretty compelling way to treat somebody who's having a severe infection, is to give them the blood of somebody who therefore would have the antibodies to the COVID. So that seems a lot more compelling to me than a vaccine.
Let's go to Ken in Kansas. Hey, Kenny, go ahead, sir.
Hey, I'm ready. Here's my story. I have been quarantined. I have the virus and tested positive. But in Crawford County, oh, hello, neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh, Kansas is pretty close to the Missouri border.
It sure is.
And I can vote mobily. I mean, in my vehicle in the county of Kansas at the county seat, which is Girard.
How do you feel, Ken? Do you feel okay?
Oh, I'm getting better, but I did have it. I really did.
Did you have the typical?
Here's what they're going to do. Tomorrow, I can go there 8 to 4, and I can vote in my vehicle, and they're going to use full PPE equipment, and I'm going to be able to vote. I will not say what I'm doing. That would not be proper.
I get it.
But believe me, I am really thankful that not only am I feeling better, but I will be able to vote. And you do not know how traumatic that was for me. I've never missed an election.
Well, you won't miss it this time, Kenny, and I'm glad you're feeling better. That's a pretty good story there, JB.
Well, I mean, I think what's crazy is, so maybe you could make an argument for quarantining sick people. We're quarantining everybody, right? That's the madness of what's happening. We've all had viral illnesses that have been really bad. Oh, man. It used to be that you could say, oh, man, I was out for 5 days. That thing really, it's going around, and it kicked my ass. And then you go back to work.
Oh.
Now it's the end of the world.
Okay, it is. Indeed, it is. Well, keep in touch with us, JB, and let's see what happens. Let's see what the future holds. Lots of things going on here, folks. Lots of things involved. In a moment, we're going to be talking about conspiracy theories and what they mean and how they have all these crazy things that have been happening. Are they real? Are they not? Conspiracy theories coming up. And then in our last hour of the program tonight, we will take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM.